Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This Columbus bakery has a mission much bigger than simply creating sweet treats. Spectrum of Sweets is a bakery that focuses on hiring and supporting autistic adults, providing them with a safe and empowering environment that allows them to work to their strengths. Joining us is the co-founder and CEO of Spectrum of Sweets, Andrea Woodrose. Welcome to All Sides, Andrea.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell me what inspired you to start a business that is focused on helping autistic adults?
Well, it started with a personal story, as most people would imagine. Our son was diagnosed with autism at almost 19, and it really changed our lives as he went from a troubled youth to perfectly autistic in a blink. So with that diagnosis, everything changed. And we know firsthand all the struggles that he and our family went through, that these individuals face day in and day out. So it also brought a sense of purpose to really break the cycle of misunderstanding. Then we realized that about 80% of autistics are underemployed or unemployed. And that was just heartbreaking to hear.
So, yes. So basically, you were realizing that autistic adults, not just your son, they need help finding a job, right? But you decided to make it a bakery. So how did that connection happen? Why a bakery?
Why a bakery? So at the time, I had owned a Cold Stone Creamery. And so I had a love of working with younger individuals and guiding them. I'd been doing that for about 14 or 15 years.
Oh, wait. A Cold Stone Creamery, like the ice cream shop. Like you owned a franchise of the ice cream shop. Is that what you mean?
I did.
Okay. It took me a second to catch up there. I was like, what kind of creamery? Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. The ice cream shop. So I'd been in retail business and retail food service for a while. And I knew that we also had a manager there who, at the time, she was just phenomenal. She'd worked with me almost my entire time, and she could work with just about anybody, no matter what their strengths were. And the two of us decided, you know what, we can do this. So we started Spectrum of Sweets together.
Okay. So Spectrum of Sweets hires autistic and neurodivergent people. But I feel like those words are not fully understood. Can you define for us what it means? You hire autistic and neurodivergent adults. What does that mean to you?
Sure. Well, autism is autistic adults are somebody who has actually been diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. And because of, you know, certain laws, we can't ask all kinds of personal questions. So we make sure that we, if they want to divulge that information, they can. Most people do generally. So autistic is a way of processing the world. So it's just a neurological difference, where neurodivergence is a broader umbrella. So that depicts the variations in the wiring of different human brains. So that would include autism, ADHD, dyslexia, OCD, and a number of other ways to process information.
Unemployment, you just mentioned unemployment for autistic adults in the U.S. Some numbers say 40%, but some estimates are as high as 85%. I guess it depends on how you look at the numbers. But what are the main challenges and roadblocks for autistic people? What challenges do they face in the workplace?
Well, I think the biggest thing that they face is really the first place is getting a job, because they have different ways of processing and adapting to the environment. So they might not have the eye contact, they might not have the small talk or the body language that people look for in an interview. So sometimes even getting once they're in an interview, they can't get the job, whether they're qualified or not. So it's even the step one is hard for them. The other thing is once they get into a job, many autistics are concrete thinkers, so they're going to take things literally. So they want things very, very spelled out. And if they're not, then it can confuse them. And even little things like in the workplace, if you know there's an overhead light that's buzzing, can really make a difference in how they process their work that day. So you know there's all kinds of different things that can inhibit them from doing a good job, and none of them are them. It's all in the environment.
There's also a high level of discrimination towards autistic people in the workplace. I mean, how do you combat that stigma with your place of business, but even just talking with others, like so that others are aware?
Well, we found that whenever I talk about providing jobs and creating jobs for autistics, we've been met with 100% success. I mean, 100% positive. We've had 30,000 in like the first 2 months likes on TikTok just because people want to support this. They just don't know how. And that's where we come in.
Do you find that other places of business have a stigma, though? Because you just mentioned, you know, they might not interview well, so they can't even get the job, right, because of the eye contact. Do people just not understand?
I think so. So the way they process and relate to others and where the workforce can be very different. And there's a lot of negative stigma and a lot of discrimination that they face. I mean, my son included. I mean, even just in, you know, interpersonal relations, it really does take a lot to, but once you understand, you realize these individuals are fabulous people. So a lot of people don't go that extra step to try and understand.
Tell us about your motto, which is autistic talent at work, proving what's possible every day. How do you model out those words?
So, well, with our people, we realize that we talk to them about their capacity and what they're capable of. And really, we don't talk about what they can't do ever. So it's always in what's possible. So, you know, when you ask somebody, hey, how's your day today? You know, and they walk in, they say, it's been a rough day. We say, okay, all right, how can we help? And we work with them. So it's working with them to figure out a way to achieve what they need to for the day and meeting them where they are day in and day out.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking with Andrea Watros, the co-founder and CEO of Spectrum of Suites. Let's talk a little bit about your business. So you're located in Pickerington, but your business is an online shop. We're not talking a brick and mortar store. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So where is the baking being done?
So the baking is done. It actually started out in the back room of Cold Stone because that was a commercial kitchen that we had. So we bought a little oven and we worked from there. But when I ended up selling Cold Stone about a year ago, and we moved into the Pickerington Senior Center, their commercial kitchen, and they have been absolutely wonderful to work with.
Okay. And so it's an online business. So tell people, you know, what they can order, what you make, what are your specialties?
Our specialties, our biggest seller is our Sweet Sentiments box, and it's a variety pack of a bunch of different cookies. But one of the things that is when somebody opens it up, they see a cookie that says, this cookie just created jobs. And so that the purpose of the business is front and center whenever anybody opens up a cookie. And the cookies passed my mom's test and from showers and wedding showers. So we know that they taste good. So
you make custom sugar cookies so people can order what they want, but then does it have a sticker on it that says it made a job? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So we actually have an edible ink printer. And so we print on the image actually on the cookies. So we can print anybody's image on any cookie. We also do drop cookies in all kinds of different flavor varieties.
So how many people work for you?
We have about 10 people working for us now. And some of them work in various aspects of in various positions.
Okay. And they're all autistic I don't know how, if you, because you said there's like employment things where you can't ask that and everything. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. I wouldn't divulge exactly how many of them actually are just to keep their privacy. Mm-hmm. However, I believe that most of them are either neurodivergent or autistic.
So does your son work for you?
Only when I ask him to, when I need some help.
Okay.
So he's in college right now.
Oh, okay. I see. So your son inspired the business, but doesn't necessarily need to work at the business. Is that the...
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So what other kind of treats do you make besides the cookies?
So we've actually whittled it down from, we were making all kinds of treats, and we can actually make them in Central Ohio. We can make Buckeyes and Rice Krispie treats and pretzels and all kinds of different, you know, dipped brownies and that kind of thing. We can do those within Central Ohio. They're not on our website because what we found is that we needed to kind of pared down what we offered to make it to work with the workforce that we had. And so we made it easier for them to make. And so that's why we focused on really the drop cookies and the printed sugar cookies, because we know that they can do those. Then when you start to do the same thing over and over and over, they get really, these individuals get really good at it. So
great. And did you have a busy holiday season? I have to think that ordering cookies was probably this time of year.
We did. Our biggest order was over 2,000 cookies. So it was a great order. It was wonderful. It created a lot of hours of work, and these individuals were just amazing. They rose to the occasion like no other.
Do you have any expansion plans, or are you pretty happy with how the business is now, or are you hoping to grow it?
I'm definitely hoping to grow it. There are people that are knocking down my door on a daily basis, trying to asking for jobs. So the more we can sell, more jobs we can create. I would love to. Ultimately, my goal is to franchise this within the next 5 years.
Okay, yeah, that was my next question. If do you feel like what you've created is like setting up a model that other other places can hire people who are autistic or neurodivergent if they follow your plan?
Absolutely. We have that goal in mind with everything that we've done so far. So it's taken us a little bit longer to launch, but the good thing is that now the infrastructure is really solid. So that way we can grow and expand pretty quickly.
I like the name being Spectrum of Sweets. I mean, I guess you probably took that from saying the autism spectrum, right?
Of course. Sure.
Was that what the day you came up with that? Were you like, did everyone go, aha?
We did. And actually, then we went to go trademark it, and we found out that the word spectrum was already trademarked for this type of goodie. And so our patent attorney kept trying to get us to change the name, and we kept trying, and we always came back to Spectrum of Sweets. So then we ended up buying the name. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's one way to take care of that.
yeah.
So many people who are on the spectrum have more sensitive systems. So how do you implement this knowledge into making sweet treats? Do you have to use certain ingredients or anything like that?
We use all fresh ingredients. And so there's no preservatives in them. So we make them with the masses in mind, and eventually want to add in the gluten-free and the vegan types of cookies as well. We're not there yet, but we're planning on getting there.
You also started a nonprofit called Spectrum of Opportunities, which acts as a sort of culinary school. So in what way does that school idea provide support and training and support for autistic people?
So it's just getting launched and it's getting off the ground. So the goal is for it to be the culinary school to the restaurant of Spectrum of Sweets. So that way, when people want to donate they wanted to put in any kind of donations, they'd be able to do that to the nonprofit. And that way that nonprofit would be able to work with Spectrum of Sweets and anybody else that they wanted to do any kind of vocational training.
Okay. So does Spectrum of Opportunities create kind of a pathway for success, through people graduate?
Yes. So that they would work in our kitchen to try and learn. And as they grow, then they would eventually be hired within our company.
Okay. In what ways do you think that the public education in the U.S. needs to change to support people with special needs, to make them successful after high school? Because I know a lot of the issues with people with autism not being able to get a job is that they don't learn in high school what they need to know, right? Sometimes.
Yeah, correct. So the big thing is in really, it's not in teaching these individuals, it's teaching the individuals that are hiring what to look for in alternative types of brain wiring. So if somebody can look at an autistic person's their job from a different perspective and a different lens, and then maybe they could hire these individuals knowing that they're going to be your best, and they're really, really great employees. They're loyal. They're wonderful. They're going to be true, and they're going to really produce and make the work that you want to. So I think the hiring people, the hiring managers, the hiring community as a whole, that's who needs to be a little bit more educated here.
How do we do that? I mean, what would you say to, someone who is in an HR school to try to like help them teach people to hire more fairly?
Well, we do it one cookie at a time, but I know that there's there's all kinds of teaching and training and educational programs out there. I think that we need our employers to put them front and center.
We have been talking with Andrea Watrous, the co-founder and CEO of Spectrum of Suites. Thank you so much for joining us today to tell us your story.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
And
appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck with growing Spectrum of Suites.
Thank you.
Coming up, we are going to meet a former preschool and kindergarten educator who opened a toy shop. That's when Fascinating Ohio from All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. And this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. Dublin Toy Emporium is an independent toy store located in historic Dublin and is a space where children and families can discover thoughtfully chosen toys that inspire creativity, imagination, and meaningful play. Owner Inez Lanham, former preschool and kindergarten educator, founded the store in 2018. And she joins us today. Welcome to All Sides, Inez.
Thank you for having me.
So your shop isn't just a toy shop. You call it a community gathering place. So for those listening who haven't visited before, how would you describe the atmosphere of your store?
Well, the reason I describe it that way is that I have toys out for the kids to explore, try out, and play with. We also have a back space that we call Fairy Hollow. And in that space, we have events and story time and all kinds of different things. Plus, you can rent it out for parties. And then outside, we made a little fairy garden. We're on the Fairy Door Trail of Dublin. And people go looking for these fairy doors. So we thought, being a toy store, we're going to totally embrace all this fairy stuff. So we made a fairy garden. The kids and families come over and they just play out there.
And you have this little event space too. What do people use the room for? Do you have a birthday party there or something like that?
Yeah, so birthday parties, wedding showers, baby showers. I also have had art classes, story time, storytellers. I'm really open to a lot of things out there that just bring people in to explore.
I think it sounds like a kid's dream come true to have your birthday party in a toy store. So
it's pretty fun. It's pretty magical because it is totally made into a fairyland. Mm-hmm. So they go around looking for fairy doors and fairies in there. So it's a lot of fun.
How did your path in early childhood education, I mentioned that you used to teach preschool and kindergarten, how did that turn into being a toy shop owner?
Well, I've always been a creative person, and I used to choreograph dances, I used to teach dance, and I felt like when I was in the classroom, play was an important component of learning. And so I really wanted to be on this side where I helped parents have options to ways to help children grow and learn things that were developmentally appropriate. If they wanted to come in and have some ideas or be guided in a certain way, I felt like I could do that. And so this gave me a chance to both be creative, work with the parents and the kids, and it just felt like the right thing to do.
Well, what I mean, because you could do all of those things by being a teacher, or you could teach dance classes, like you mentioned. When did the idea of, like, I should open a toy store, like, where did that come from?
Yes, well, I've worked in retail before, so I felt like I had some experience there. And then one day I was in historic Dublin. I drove by and I saw this vacant spot, and I just kind of had this vision to that the community needed this space, this toy store. I really believe in having local retail. It's a part of the beautiful vibe of the historic area. And so I just started to think about that, and everything just started to click and fall into place.
How does your past experience influence the type of toys you choose for the store? Tell me about like the kinds of toys you pick, because I know it's in particular.
Yes, I mean, that was a big part, is that I really knew what would be appropriate for certain kids at certain ages, working on certain skills that were still fun and playful. And so, for example, I have one of my favorite lines is my STEM lines. I have like talking microscopes, talking telescopes, things where the kids are interacting and learning. But then I ha also have the most basic things that kids really need to just explore, which are like costumes, dress up costumes, puppets. I have art supplies to work on the fine motor skills and creativity.
You mentioned meaningful play earlier. What does that mean to you? What is meaningful play?
Well, kids learn through play. I mean, for example, a lot of their social emotional things that they're processing come out through play. They are observing the world and then going into the pretend play and exploring what it means to, interact with another person. And they do it through these role playing. It's just in general, they are learning through play, in that meaningful way.
Can you give me an example of a type of toy you offer that maybe not won't be in the toy aisles of a Target or a Walmart or something like that?
Well, I do try to curate toys from all over. Like, I have beautiful wooden German toys. I have, I try to look for the things that are unique, that are different. I go to a lot of different vendors, sometimes not vendors that are well known.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Dublin Toy Emporium with founder and owner Inez Lanham. You're also a mother yourself. How has that shaped the way you run your business?
Yeah, that is a huge component of it, because not only did I have the experience of being in the classroom and watching play, but I had my own children, and it mattered to me what I brought home for them to play with. I wanted things that were safe, that were of good quality. I watched how they interacted with certain things. And then I also saw how it influenced who they are. I mean, both of my daughters ended up going in STEM. We did a lot of really rich science activities that I think really helped them with that. But then we also did a lot of art, and having the opportunity to create your own things works a certain part of the brain that I think is just so valuable in terms of being able to create, think of your own ideas and implement them.
And you don't see very many toy stores anymore. Toys R Us went bankrupt years ago. They reemerged smaller and inside Macy's stores. Do you think children are missing out on that experience of the toy store?
I do. I mean, I get to watch it every day here, and it really is about relationships. I also think that when kids come in, sometimes they're choosing gifts for their friends, so they have to make a thoughtful choice when they're coming in. Also, a lot of times they'll come with their money that they've earned. So again, they have to practice making choices there. And then I also see it as like a special days with their family. Grandma bringing them in for their birthday and getting to pick a gift. So they're creating memories that you just can't get from ordering online.
Yeah. What do you hope parents take away from the store when they visit? Because you just described what kids get from it, but what do the parents get?
Well, I mean, the parents get, first of all, like if they really need some advice on what things would be appropriate for their children, also somebody who curates things specifically for, good value, good quality, things that are stimulating. I think that's something that I'm able to do for them. I know a lot of my customers really appreciate me taking the time to help them with their gift making decisions. And then on top of it, we like to add all the personal services like complimentary gift wrapping. And so yeah, we try to go out of our way and really help out.
And the holiday season, I'm sure, was a very busy time for you. Did you do well? Was it a good season?
It was a good season, and I always love the holiday season. I mean, we have Mr. and Mrs. Claus come and they sing to the kids, and then they get to visit them. And every year, parents say how much they appreciate the more intimate experience they have with that. And then we have all kinds of just fun activities and different things that we do during that time of year. So, yeah, it's just a fun time, and people really come out during that time and really do support local, which I do appreciate.
Do you have any best sellers? Like something where the second you get it in stock, it flies off the shelf?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, I think it's different because there's different areas that are best sellers. Like I said, some of my STEM things parents just love because they really do engage the kids. It's one thing to give a kid a microscope and they look at it once or twice and they're done. It's another thing that has like all kinds of slides with somebody talking about it, and then little quizzes and activities. So something like that, I think, is always popular. But yeah, I mean, I get all kinds of, it just depends on what area. Like magnet tiles are great for building, and they come up with all kinds of add-ons that make it fresh. But I really can't pinpoint one area because I feel like there's a variety of things that like really appeal.
How long have you owned the store? How long have you been open?
It's 8 years now.
Oh, 8 years. Okay. So do you have any future plans to grow? Do you want to have more locations?
I kind of like just being in my, where I live, having my store in my community where I'm meeting people that I see regularly. And for me, that's enough.
Yeah. Okay. So what is your favorite thing about running a toy store?
I really do think it's the relationships that I form with people and just the conversation. It just is always such a lovely experience when you're engaging with people. You learn so much. Sometimes I've had people come in and say, they're buying something for their grandmother who has Alzheimer's. So you have to think of what would be appropriate for that. Or I learn about their child who's autistic and we look for things that are helpful for that. And they really tell you a lot about their life, and you just really connect on a more personal level, which I really love.
Now, running a small business is hard. I know that I've talked to enough small business owners to know that it's not an easy life. So, what's your least favorite thing about running a toy store?
You know what? I think it's always hard to find good help because I can't be here 24 hours. And so that's always a challenge to trust something that you love so much to other people. Lately, I've really gotten into mentoring high school students. I'm really enjoying that. But they are learning, so I have to look at it as a learning opportunity for them. And so with that comes some mistakes, but I like being part of that process.
My first job as a high school student was in an ice cream store, but I could imagine your first job at a toy store. That would be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to really enjoy it for that reason. I think one of the things my high schoolers say is that the customers are usually very nice, so they're working in a place where people are respectful, because I think the people who come in looking for a local experience are they're just different customers, and they appreciate that. They say it's pretty laid back, and an enjoyable job. So yeah, I think they really, I think they're happy to be here.
All right. Well, just to end on before we're out of time, tell us how we can find you, where you're located, and when we should visit.
Yeah, so we are, like I said, in historic Dublin, 28 North High Street. And we're right across from Tucci's, if you are familiar with the restaurant Tucci's, which I frequent all the time. We are open Monday through Sunday, so we're open every day. We're usually during the week, and Saturdays we're open from 10 to 6, but on Sundays we're open from 11 to 5.
All right. Well, thank you so much for telling me about your store. We have been talking about the Dublin Toy Emporium with founder and owner, Inez Lanham. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And coming up, we are going to talk about a community bike shop with the executive director of Franklinton Cycle Works. That is when Fascinating Ohio from All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. Franklinton Cycle Works is a community bike shop, a place where anyone can use the space, tools, and expert advice free of cost. The shop also offers low-cost parts and programs that provide free bikes to those in need. And joining us now is Executive Director of Franklinton Cycle Works, Craig Dransfield. Welcome to All Sides, Craig.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you joined the business recently. Can you back up for me? Do you know why or how Franklinton Cycle Works started?
Yeah, it started as a group of four friends living in Franklinton, from what I was told. And they were living there. They saw a need for people in the neighborhood for fixing their bikes for transportation. And they started by fixing the bikes, I think, on their front porch. And then from there, then they got a small garage space they worked out of, and then they moved later into the space that we have now and then expanded into the building next door.
Wow.
So,
okay. That's some good growth.
It was over 15 years ago. 15 years, I think, is when we became an actual nonprofit. So I think it's actually been like 17 years or something like that. So
okay. Yeah. And then, so how did you get introduced to it or get involved?
I got introduced over a year ago. The building was hit by a car. And
I remember that. Yeah. It was a thing on the news. Yeah. Yeah.
Another Columbus building hit by car.
It happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
But only matters when it happens to you.
Yeah. And so people reached out to me, and I came up and did a I'm an artist, so I did a graphic for them and screen printed a bunch of t-shirts, and we did this whole fundraiser over at Land Grant, and that's how I was kind of introduced to Franklinton Cycle Works. Originally was like by helping them out, and then I had friends that were working there, and kind of over the winter, people approached me and were like, hey, they're needing a new executive director. And I was like, oh, well, maybe. And then they were like, hey, you should, put your name in the hat. And here we are.
Really?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So just that simple. You got connected with them and now you're in charge?
Yeah, that's how it was. Yeah, as they say, the universe has funny plans for you. So,
so you did not grow up with I'm going to run a bike shop. That's my dream.
No, I used to run a space on Parsons Avenue that was like car repair, skateboarding, art, business incubator, all these things. And we had a lot of bikes in there that we would loan out to people. So that has always been, I tell people I live in the triangle between bicycle, skateboarding, and art is where I live. And so this was just kind of like an alternate universe thing where it's like, oh, I never did a lot of stuff with bikes. And so it was very parallel to already kind of what I was doing with my own businesses.
So. Yeah. So in the Venn diagram that is your life, what made you say yes to being executive director, though?
Well, I think the mission of the place, I mean, being able to help people in the community was always something I was always doing, but more just like out of the profits from my own businesses. And, you know, the fact that, you know, and it was something that I can, you know, continue to do, you know, up until I took this job. But this just, you know, is a place to be able to do it on a lot bigger scale. Mm-hmm. And what they do there is just amazing. Just like being able to help so many people out, not just people in the community, but like, you know, children, you know, giving bikes away to children, giving bikes away to people that are experiencing homelessness or coming out of incarceration. It just is like a really amazing job to have, really rewarding.
Let's do a quick rundown of some of the different programs you offer. So let's start with what I mentioned at the beginning, the open shop concept. Mm-hmm. So people can come in and fix their bikes?
Yeah. So we refer to that kind of as our core function. So we are open to the public, and anybody can come in regardless of, you know, where, you know, your economic status. And we have 6 to 8 stands open and all of the super expensive and unique bike mechanic tools there for people to use, and usually a mechanic is available to help people out too. So anybody can come in, and then like you said, we have super cheap parts, dollar inner tubes, you know, $5 tires, you know, $5 parts, so that anybody can come in and keep their bikes up and running for, you know, super affordable pricing.
So if you know how to fix it, you can do it yourself. But if you don't know how to fix it, there's someone there who can help.
There's usually somebody there to help you. And typically that happens on the weekend. Saturday and Sunday is when we are kind of like tell people that. But really it's happening every day that we're open to the public. Mm. So.
And you have youth programs too. Tell me about some of the youth programs.
So the youth programs, we have one that we do with the Columbus Blue Jackets and Avondale School, which is right around the corner from us. We did the first one last year, and we gave away 34 brand new bikes to those kids, and then took them out on a ride out the Patel Darby Metro Parks. And then I started a pilot program with the United Way, where we gave away 64 bikes to the Whitehall School District. Mm-hmm. And that was based on a reading and attendance initiative. So the kids that like met this initiative got their name pulled out of a hat, got their Willy Wonka golden ticket. And then a week later, we came back with bikes. And then from help with the Department of Neighborhoods, we were in a children's hospital. We then were able to give them the bikes, give them a helmet, and also then give them a safety ride there behind the school. So
that's amazing. Yeah. You know, when I was in school, I read books to get a pizza. So.
I know. This is like this is way better than getting like a Garfield poster. Or
yeah,
something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So the youth programs, when you say you partnered, like did the Blue Jackets buy the bikes? Or
they did a majority of the funding. It was the Blue Jackets and then some, I think it was like a bricklayers union. This happened before I started. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, so we partner and kind of raise the money to get, and so yeah, moving forward, we're going to be doing a bunch of those with Nationwide Children's Hospital, mm-hmm. some more with United Way. The second version of the what's called the Great Bike Adventures, what we do with Avondale, will be happening this spring. We actually just started the conversation a couple of days ago about getting that going again. So yeah, we have a whole bunch of those planned for this year. But then in addition to the kids stuff, we also do adult program or adult bike giveaways, and so those are usually to people coming out of incarceration or somebody experiencing homelessness. And so an organization will contact us, like a church or a probation officer, and say, hey, you know, Bob needs a bike, and then Bob shows up and we give him a bike. So mm-hmm. and so that's kind of our adult programming. And then we also do a thing that just kind of started this year, which is teenagers needing to get to school. And so a bunch of guidance counselors got a hold of me and were like, hey, this kid lives too far away for the bus. You know, the bus is not able to pick him up, but he's 3 miles away. He needs to get to school. So we were able to give away, I think, 25 or 30 bikes to kids, like teenagers that needed to get to school.
Is that like a piecemeal thing? People call you, or is it an actual program?
Well, the one with the teenagers is something I just kind of, you know, put together quickly this mm-hmm. year because of the need, you know, with the, I think a lot of the busing is going away.
Columbus City Schools is having busing issues.
Right.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. you know, this is kind of like just jumping in quickly to have the need. And again, all these are kind of, you know, how it works is we get a huge amount of bikes donated to us. Mm-hmm. And so then we kind of like decide, okay, are these bikes that we're going to refurbish and sell on our floor from anywhere from $25 up to, you know, like $300, but these are like refurbished bikes. And then either, so they go that way, or they're ones that we fix back up to run on one of these programs, or if they're, you know, and then we also give them to the Department of Neighborhoods. So then we help them fix those up, and they end up in the rec centers around town. Mm-hmm. So
this is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about Franklinton Cycle Works with Executive Director Craig Dransfield. The name Bicycles for Independence, is that what you were talking about, yeah, about the bikes for the incarcerated?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me more about that. Yeah.
Well, that program, again, was started before me. But, mm-hmm, yeah, basically somebody, you know, somebody will contact us. They fill out an MOU form. And then, you know, we are then partnered with that organization, and, you know, they just send stuff over to us. Previously, we had funding for that. As of this year, that funding dwindled. So we kind of had to pivot on our feet and kind of, you know, again, I just pivoted to using more volunteer hours to be able to fix up those bikes versus using our employees. Mm-hmm. So that was able to keep the cost down.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you do have bikes for sale on your floor. So is that how you make your money, or you make your money from donations to stay in business?
Yeah, I mean, we get money from donations, but about 2/3 of our money comes from sales, you know, mm-hmm, because we have a retail thing. So, yeah, the refurbished bikes that we sell, you know, it could be a $1,000 bike that we're selling for like $400, because basically we just have kind of our time and parts in it. And then so, you know, all of Columbus then is able to come in and buy super affordable bikes and kind of, you know, eliminate that barrier to entry to get into bicycling, which can sometimes be super expensive. You know, and then everybody can also then benefit from the parts that we have next door. So if they want to buy a cheap bike and then, you know, add a rack to it or put, mm-hmm, some baskets or whatever, all that stuff is available next, you know, in the other part of our shop in the used parts bins for like, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Do you sell just traditional pedaling bikes, or do you sell electric bikes too?
We have e-bikes, but that kind of fell away because the e-bike incentive in Columbus went away this year. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the e-bikes that we were selling were basically bikes that, you know, we had earmarked for people. So they came in with their voucher and then we would order them a bike. So, but we do sell a small amount of e-bikes. We have, you know, brand new bikes that we sell too, but the lion's share of what we're selling are these refurbished bikes.
And this past month, you had your first annual holiday bike giveaway.
Yeah.
This was a big, big moment for you.
Yeah. Well, we had, after we did the Wheels for Whitehall program, we had all the, you know, kind of leftover bikes, because it was like I had to, you know, get together about 150 bikes so that we knew that we were going to be able to give away 50 good bikes for that program. So then the bikes that were left over, I partnered with the Central Ohio Mountain Bike Organization and Columbus Gives Back, and then our own volunteer base all came in on 3 different instances, and we fixed all of those bikes up. Mm-hmm. And then we took those around to the local rec center. So we went to Gladden House, Sullivan Gardens, and Dodge Park. All receive those.
Wow. Do the bikes live at the rec center, or could the rec center give them away?
They gave them away. It was part of their holiday, like, present fun. Yeah, so it was great. The timing of it was, like, perfect, you know, again, because this was like, hey, we have these. Let's give them away, you know. Let's get them out into the community, and it just timed with their holiday giveaways, so.
So one thing that Franklinton Cycle Works really advocates strongly for, and you mentioned it earlier, is talking about transportation insecurity, mm-hmm, which is a huge issue in Columbus. I mean, this is related to Columbus is a very car-focused city. It's hard to navigate the city without a car.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how bikes can help with transportation insecurity.
Well, I mean, it can help everybody get all over the city. I mean, we have a wonderful bike path system in the city, and the city is, you know, as you can see, is starting to dump in a whole bunch more bike paths all over the city with the Link Us program. So, you know, being able to get somebody on a cheap bicycle, the, you know, you don't have it to pay insurance like you do for a car. You don't have, you know, the repairs are, you know, way less than you would ever have on a vehicle, but then that can get you around. And then it's, again, if you know about us and you can come down, we can help keep you going for, you know, next to no money. Mm-hmm. So
do you have people who come and talk to you where they say like, I can't afford a car, or maybe they lost their license, they can't drive a car, and they're just talking to you about like, oh man, I can't believe I have to ride a bike, and then you're there like, riding a bike is great.
Yeah, that's definitely where we all are. We're like, everybody that works at the shop has all come up, you know, riding BMX bikes, and, you know, it's like, oh, it's, you know, but, you know, that, yeah, we definitely get a lot of that, but it's like, yeah, you know, we try and help them out. And, you know, usually once people get on them, it brings them back to childhood again, I think, pretty quickly.
Is it just like riding a bike? I mean, do you have some adults come to you who hadn't been on a bike in 20 years?
Oh, we have definitely had that experience where it's like, oh, wait, you're still trying to remember how to ride a bike. And then we usually just go ride with them in the neighborhood. You know, a couple of the bikes for independence people were definitely like that, where it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I need to give you a hand on that. So, yeah. But we, you know, it's like, that's what we're there for, you know?
Yeah. I recently, within the past year or so, I taught my son how to ride a bike, and there's a lot of holding on. Yeah. In the back, and then being like, I'm gonna let go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, imagine that, like, the second time around with an adult who maybe has some shame involved that they had maybe, like, weren't as good as they were, you know, earlier on or whatever. But yeah, there's no shame. We all love riding bikes, and we just want to make sure everybody's out having fun and is safe. So,
for younger kids, are you on the? What's your opinion of training wheels versus the balance bike? Everyone's all into balance bikes now.
We have both of them there. I think at the end of the day, it's whatever the kids feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the balance bikes are great because they can kind of push themselves and kind of figure out. But, you know, I think we do about equal of those. I mean, we are putting training wheels and putting kids out on balance bikes. I think as long as people are getting on bikes and learn how to ride them, we're happy.
Okay. So. Yeah. My son could never figure out a balance bike for some reason. And so we just went with the training wheels.
Yeah.
I think you have to have the right equilibrium to make a balance bike work.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about your mission. Mm-hmm. You know, you want more people on bikes. You want everyone to have access to a bike. You want people to be able to fix their bikes and be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about where you see things in the future.
Well, I would hope that, you know, right now we're, you know, servicing, you know, primarily we've been servicing Franklinton area, mm-hmm. you know, and then you know, as I came on, I'm like, well, the need is way bigger than Franklinton. We mm-hmm. need to be able to, like, help people out all over, you know, Columbus, the need's everywhere. And so, I mean, there's some other organizations that are like ours that are out there, third-hand bikes and bikes for all people. But, I mean, the need is still bigger than just the three of our organizations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, hopefully we would be able to partner with corporate sponsors and then, you know, expand and be able to have more, like, Franklin and Style Cycle Works buildings around in Linden or on the south side. Because, I mean, it's like we really need to be in the areas that need us the most.
Do you have people coming from all over the city to you, or is it mainly Franklin? Yeah.
No, we have people coming from all over the city. And the more that we have gotten out into the public and are doing, you know, speaking about our mission on, you know, on platforms like this, the more people find us. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really great kind of expansion that we've had since I've started. So.
And the volunteer part of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you find your volunteers? Do you have enough of them?
We can always use more volunteers. The volunteers, typically there's a online program called Point, and the people sign up to do volunteer stuff, and that's where we have our programming there. But since I started, that Tuesday night is when we do that. Tuesday night, 6:30 to 8:30-ish is when that happens. But since I started, we sometimes we'll have a second one on a Thursday, especially during the summer. And that's where the group like Columbus Gives Back has come in, or the group Combo, because, I mean, we have just so many bikes coming through that need to get serviced, cleaned up. You know, just like there's so much time in just cleaning a bike even before you start doing the mechanical work that kind of anybody can do. And then the other thing is, like, we're doing training. So, like, when the volunteers come in, then a lot of them are getting trained to, like, be a better bike mechanic too. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, we can always use more volunteers especially as we start expanding more and doing more of these programs.
Can people donate an old bike to you?
Yeah, people donate bikes to us. They can call us or info@franklintoncycleworks.org, email us. We typically can even drive out to them and pick the bikes up. But yeah, we have tons of bikes being given to us every day. And then basically they just get turned around and given right back out to people or sold on our floor.
How long have you been executive director in your spot?
Since June.
Okay, so very new.
Fresh.
Very fresh. So What's one project you hope to do in the coming year? Since you're so new, I know you're probably trying to keep things going.
Yeah, I think it's really solidified. You know, I'm trying to partner with some organizations so that our Bikes for Independence program has a partner. Trying to partner with with another organization and maybe help with the teen bike giveaways for the school children, and then obviously, we're going to be doing a whole bunch more of the youth bike giveaways this coming year. We're hoping to do at least 5 of them. So,
great. Okay. And expanding into other areas of the city, is that maybe beyond you? Like
that, yeah, that might be a 2027, 28 thing. Again, it's, you know, the, you know, we're living in an uncertain economic time. So it's kind
I've
of,
heard that you, before.
Yeah,
yes.
You've heard that. Yeah. So it's like right now, it's just kind of pivoting as things keep changing, you know, staying light on our feet and kind of going where the need is and trying to do it for as inexpensively as we can.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we've been talking about Franklinton Cycle Works with Executive Director Craig Dransfield. Thank you so much for your time today,
Craig. Thank you so much.
And this has been All Sides and Fascinating Ohio on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us.